My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I'll be one of my friends. I'm just trying to make you some money. My job, not just to entertain, but to educate, teach, context. Call me, 1-800-743-CNBC, or tweet me at Jim Cramer. You want to know what's driving this market with the Dow ultimately tumbling 282 points today, S&P dipping 0.53%, while the NASDAQ actually advanced 0.67%, led by the Cramer COVID stocks? Yeah, that's what this market was about today. Zoom Video, the work-at-home king, Zoom 7.6%, followed by Livongo Health, up 6.9%, Ring Central, up 6.3%, Datadog, Veeva Systems, 6.1%, Teladoc, up 4.7%, Masimo, up 4.6%, Twilio and Etsy, up 4.5%, DocuSign, Salesforce, Slack, Microsoft, NVIDIA, CrowdStrike, Chegg, they're all surging. And you know what they have in common, don't you? These are the stay-at-home economy stocks, and they're back. Or maybe they just took a breather before they reignited. I'm proud that we've had all but one of these on the show. I'm trying to bring them all to you. Now, why? Why is this happening? Because today we started worrying again about the pandemic. Cases are spiking, and that defined the action, even as we got a very strong 1-2 punch of good news from the three J's. And that's Johnson, Johnson, and Jay. The three J's. Let's start with some good news. First, J&J announced that it's starting human trials for the COVID-19 vaccine 2 months ahead of schedule. In July, it's right around the corner. That is very positive. It is fabulous. And there is no reason for J&J to come on and talk about it unless they really had confidence when they spoke to Meg Terrell. That told me it's the real deal, because J&J is one of the least hype-oriented companies in the world. Then right on its heels, we heard from the third J, Jay Powell, who promised to prevent another terrible quarter like the one that this country is having right now. By the way, it's the worst Q2 on record. And how's he going to do it? By any means necessary. As much as I love it when our Fed chief tells us that he'll do whatever it takes, I found myself wishing that Powell would just own up to what's really going on here. He'll do what he can to keep the balls in the air until the other Jays, the brothers Johnson, can come up with a vaccine and put an end to this whole sorry period. Of course, it's not that simple. But we really do have to start recognizing what Powell's doing, which is the same thing that Treasury Secretary Mnuchin's doing, the same thing that Congress did when it passed the stimulus package. They're trying to plug enough holes in the dike to make sure we can get the upward slanted part of the V-shaped recovery growing. And they also know that it's not sustainable until the vaccine arrives. You can get this part going down, but to get this part, well, you need a vaccine or else it goes. When you hear the head of the Federal Reserve say, and I quote, "We are not thinking about raising rates. We are not even thinking about raising rates," end quote. You know he's trying to do everything in his power to keep things from going off the rails and doesn't want to discourage anybody by saying that he's going to start raising. When you have this kind of epiphany, it puts a lot of things in perspective. Take Friday's surprisingly fabulous employment number. Now, look, remember, we were looking for 8 million lost jobs. Instead, we got 2 million new ones. Of course, we didn't really create those jobs as much as we clawed them back as states reopened. So now that the reopening has arrived, why can't we just go back to normal? In part, it's because cases are already starting to spike in states that opened early. No spike in deaths yet, but we know that deaths tend to lag cases by 2 to 3 weeks. Still, we have a better understanding of the virus than we did in March when we really knew nothing. We have more resources. Everybody knows to wear a mask now. However, ending the lockdown just isn't enough. Sweden never had a lockdown in the first place. Their economy still tanked because people are afraid of getting sick. Lots of people who are at risk still needed to stay home. There are tons of otherwise productive people who are now relying on government stimulus to get them through until when? Until we have a vaccine. Powell and Mnuchin in Congress need to keep stimulating the economy. There is no choice. Let's be clear. As Jay Powell said today, quote, "There's no playbook here," end quote. That's because we really have no idea how closely people can gather without a vaccine or a cure. even after all the misery of the last few months, we just don't know enough about this darn thing. The science, it's so, it's a novel virus. And although we have a better understanding of how it works than we did earlier this year, we know it's not a respiratory illness, for heaven's sake. We're still very much in the dark of a lot of things. Do you need to stay 6 feet away from people outdoors? Is it 7 feet indoors? Is it 8? Can it be stopped by a mask? What kind of mask? An N95? Can it be an Etsy mask? Does the mask only stop transmission? Or does everybody need to wear one for you to be protected? If you wear a mask, you maintain that distance. Can you safely go out drinking? How do you drink with a mask? How do you go to games? Can you high five? Can you fist bump? Or, most deadly, use the bathroom at a sporting event. What will a mask do there? And how can you possibly be socially distant at halftime? The truth is, if COVID's making a comeback, if it's not safe to gather in large crowds, then millions of Americans just simply won't be able to get their jobs back because they rely on crowds. They'll be on the dole until we get back to normal or the dole runs out. And we can't get back to normal without a vaccine. Let me give you a couple of examples. We're now starting to see some numbers from the airlines, which need both vacationers and business travelers. Right now, we don't have much of either. Then there's the restaurants. Some of the big chains are putting up pretty good numbers to show they'll be able to stay in business. Stay in business is the operative term. They have cash flow. They have customers coming back. Sure, they can't serve anywhere near as many people as they used to, at least not inside. Some chairs and tables remain empty because of social distancing, but they have the money. They can make it. But the small, medium-sized outfits, are you kidding me? Give me a break. They'll go through that paycheck protection money like no tomorrow. They won't get the customers. They won't get the folks who drink a lot. The real money-making group of people. And they won't have crowds. I know restaurants and I know bars. I own them. If you don't have crowds, you're not thinking about bringing on more staff. You're only thinking about whether you should lay off everybody and close before the rent crushes you. We see the same thing at the mall. When even the Gap can't pay the rent to the Simon Properties Group, who, by the way, ended that Taubman deal. Well, I mean, guess what? They get sued. But what do you think happens to the smaller companies that have far less access to capital? Sayonara. I know what the smaller retailers won't do. They won't wait for Jay Powell to save them because they can't. Which brings me to today's market. When you look at what went up today, it was strictly the COVID stocks. The Cramer COVID Index was up nearly 1.5% today, after outperforming significantly yesterday, too. And that's why the Dow and the S&P got hammered, but the Nasdaq went up big. These stocks are back in play. And it's why this market's all about the three J's, Johnson, Johnson, J. I love having Powell on board, believe me, but it's the other two J's we need to succeed in making a vaccine. Or maybe it could be Regeneron or Moderna or AstraZeneca or Pfizer. Anything, please. You can listen to every word Jay Powell is saying that he'll do his part to get those 22 million people back to work. But this simply isn't a problem for the Fed. It's not a problem for Mnuchin. It's not a problem for Congress. It's a problem for pharma. Apple can't solve it. Amazon can't solve it. NVIDIA, maybe. They're doing some pretty good stuff. But the home builders can't solve it. No. It's these guys. Only the pharmaceutical companies can beat this pandemic. Until then, we can see some industrials or oils or banks or airlines rally on the hopes that Powell will do his part. But there's only so high they can go without a vaccine. And now that you can see that they're being repelled and repelled hard. Bottom line. No broad-based rally from this level is sustainable without a major scientific breakthrough in the fight against COVID-19. This is pretty much as high as we can get absent a vaccine. Until then, well, you're looking at it. Stick with the Cramer COVID Index, especially on the days when we get way too optimistic about a recovery. Kevin in Illinois. Kevin.
Hey, Jim. Love your show. Been watching since the first day you went on the air.
Thank you.
Two things. I love politics and I love trading. I was a 22-year Chicago Board of Trade veteran. Also worked on a successful presidential campaign. So I want to know your thoughts on Snapchat and social media stocks that take a stand against disinformation and what your thoughts are overall on civil unrest and the way to trade stocks.
Well, you know, look, civil protest in the name of innate racism in this country is good. And I favor it. I don't know how to really conflate it with the stocks. I mean, I'm glad that, you know, Snap obviously is doing well because they agree that there's no room for racism. There's no free speech for racism when it comes to that. To my view, it seems to be the view of Snap and Twitter. If Facebook really wants to see its stock go higher, maybe they should endorse the notion that there should be no free speech for racism. I think that would be a good change. Let's go to Kevin in Texas. Kevin.
Hey, Jim, I wanted to get your take on Kroger. Over the last few months, I've noticed more customers in the stores and much more traffic for their clickless curbside pickup. I think this traffic will show up in the quarterly earnings next week. What's your opinion?
I think they're going to have a good quarter, but my problem is they are up against a company called Costco. And Costco may be the best run company on earth. So even though I think Kroger's good, I think they got good managers, I like their stores, I refuse to own, I recommend a company that has to go up against the king. And the king is Costco. Let's go to Ali in California. Ali.
Sunny San Diego. Booyah to you, Jimmy Chill.
Lucky man, booyah. The Chill Man's under attack in Twitter. But that's okay. I got unlimited firepower. And I get up at 3. What time do they get up? I'll set the alarm for 2:45.
First, I want to say thank you. I was a caller on your show 9 years ago. And I took your advice on buying Apple after they announced the Verizon iPhone, and I just held on to it. So thank you, Jimmy Chill. You are the man.
Well, people want to trade Apple endlessly and lose money. I actually prefer making money. I think it's a better posture. How can I help?
Well, now for my question. With everyone working from home lately, athleisure has become the unofficial dress code of the pandemic. I sold at 210 in April, and I've regretted it daily. But with earnings tomorrow, is it a good time to rebuy, or should I wait for a dip in Lululemon?
You know what, Lulu, here's the way it works. It usually comes out. The headline, there's like the second where people think that it's not that good, or someone tries to tamp it down because they're short and make it look bad, and that's your chance to snap it up. Lulu is an amazing company. It is just an amazing company. What can I say? Really fabulous. All right. I want you right now to recognize that the Cramer COVID Index is in play. Why? Because as much as the Fed does, Secretary of Treasury, President, Congress, it's a vaccine that is needed. Until we get a scientific breakthrough, we may not be able to go much higher in a lot of the recovery stocks. Oh, Mad Money tonight. Looking to book a trip in the cruise stocks or airline space? I'll tell you why an investment in the sectors could be put on pause. Then there's a bull market in the great outdoors, and I'm eyeing a play that's still cheap. Cheap enough that it could be worth buying at these levels. I'm going to reveal the name. And as the economies begin to reopen, I'm sitting down with Marriott Vacations Worldwide to get a read on how it's operating in a COVID-19 world, struggling to open its doors at all its places, but they're doing pretty well. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
As the airline and cruise ship stocks get slammed for second day, you need to recognize that these stocks probably never should have been flying that high to begin with. For days, we've been watching these stocks, marveling at how they keep soaring with no sellers anywhere, even though none of the airlines or the cruise lines is actually saying anything positive. These stocks deserve to rebound from their March lows. I admit to that. But once we realize they'll be able to survive this difficult period, they deserve to go up. But you know what? There's a big difference between surviving and thriving. They traded like they were thriving, propelled by a new group of amateur investors. That is, until yesterday. Now they are getting hammered. And I need to stress that this is not a buying opportunity. This is not, say, like Grubhub, which just got a sweet takeover bid tonight from an outfit that I don't really know, but I think it's going to be, I wouldn't clown out other buyers. There are no takeovers here that's going to save the day. Let's start with the cruise lines. Right now, the cruise business is literally non-existent. The CDC won't let them sail until late July. And we hope that if you're a cruise line shareholder, that even happens. Who the heck buys stock in a cruise line that can't cruise? Novices who don't know any better, that's who. Because when you bother to look at news, something that these often oblivious buyers don't bother to do, it's ugly. For instance, what was going on at Carnival today? Top headline? The Cunard Line's Queen Mary II and Queen Victoria won't be selling until November 1st at the earliest. How about Royal Caribbean? Oh, okay, well, they're selling $1 billion in senior guaranteed notes due in 2023. How much are they paying? How about 9.125%? That's almost usury. Then there's $1.15 billion in 4.25% convertible notes due in 2023. Talk about multiple guns to your head. It's almost a death sentence if they don't start cruising again soon. There's only so long you can borrow and extortion your interest rates before you're in big trouble. How about Norwegian? Well, we got the good news that it has $3.5 billion in liquidity. It can therefore survive without sailing for 18 months. Positive burn rate. But that didn't stop the stock from plummeting 14% today. Could the cruise lines be bailed out? Don't hold your breath. These aren't U.S. companies for tax purposes, and they're about as far as it gets from essential. How about the airlines? What was the news flow? All right. This is good for the uninformed guys. The guys who are just trading whamma jamma. This might help you. Delta's selling 5-year unsecured notes that may yield 8%. The good news? The last time Delta came to the market back in April, they raised $3.5 billion selling notes that were secured by its lucrative slots in New York and Heathrow airports. That paper yields 5.4% right now. This time, they didn't even have to offer such precious collateral. Delta said today it believes that its revenue will decline 90%. And it expects its passenger count. When will the count be back? Well, it says it'll be below pre-pandemic levels through 2023. Buying opportunity? United, J.P. Morgan downgraded along with JetBlue, noting that, quote, we do not believe the current pace of equity ascent can be potentially maintained for much longer, end quote. Thanks, guys. They're worried about the need for dilutive equity offerings and not so high corporate demand, among other reasons. American, their June cash burn is only $40 million a day. It's down from $50 million. Now you're talking to him, right? I mean, isn't that great? I bet it takes all day to shovel $40 million into a bonfire. Listen, for the cruise lines to stay alive, they really need to be able to cruise. For the airlines to stay viable, people have to stop thinking of planes as COVID incubators. They need these rapid test machines in every airport so they can find out if you have the virus before you board. It's taking your temperature as a joke. It's not enough. You can still transmit this thing before you have symptoms. Did you listen to Dr. Fauci today? Without serious safety precautions, I don't think they'll see the resurgence in traveling that they desperately need. All the companies that compete with each other for business keep taking meetings with Zoom or with Cisco's WebEx, which means in-person corporate travel could dry up almost completely. Why do I point this out? Because the airlines and the cruise lines were some of the hottest stocks in this market until yesterday. All the information I just mentioned is pretty much par for the course for these very troubled industries. Yet there's absolutely no recognition of this during the remarkable ascent. Carnival cruises from below 8 to 25. Norwegian, 7 to 27. Royal Caribbean, 31.75. All within a matter of days. Same with the airlines. Delta, 17 to 37. American, 8 to the low 20s. United climbed from the teens to nearly 50. I think these companies were fools not to issue billions of dollars in equity because their stocks have been bid up by amateurs who'd yet to learn that stocks can also go down. Welcome to the club, pals. Now the amateurs and the big institutional investors are tripping all over each other to get out of these stocks. Don't get me wrong, the rallies were real. Somebody made money, especially if they rang the register. Maybe they bagged them. Maybe they gunned them. I hope they liquidated them. But it was a terrific trade. The reality is that airlines and cruise lines were bid up by neophytes who'd yet to taste their first losses. And now that they have, they're spitting out the stocks as quickly as they can. Stick with Cramer. And by the way, here's a sneak peek into what my friend Scott Wapner has coming up tonight.
Tonight at 7 p.m., as pro golf hits the links again, a look at a new normal on the course, plus a view of the reopening from restaurant owner Marcus Samuelson and how he's helping a community through pandemic and protests. And business owners on what's known as Tulsa's Black Wall Street getting creative in a time of crisis. All tonight at 7 p.m. with Scott Wapner.
One thing's become very clear over the past couple of weeks. We have got a stampeding bull market in the great outdoors. The RV stocks are roaring. Thor Industries knocked it out of the park when they reported last week. May have seen them on the show. The golf stocks we've liked for ages, think Callaway, Acushnet, they are white hot. The boating stocks are roaring, with Brunswick up 138% from its March lows, and the smaller Malibu boats closing in on a new all-time high. I just go sell my 17-foot Boston Whaler. But then, how would I fish? Remember, what I used last time, Yeti. It's one we've liked since the beginning, but I was actually using the real deal. The cooler and outdoor drink wear play. It's up 5% for the year. Just set a new all-time high on Monday. Even Dick's Sporting Goods, an old-fashioned retailer, was able to rally on reported what I thought was a not-so-high quarter last week. Oh, and try getting a bike in this country. I tried to look for one this weekend. There's none available, stationary or the road kind. Tonight, I've got another one for you. A great outdoors play that's still cheap enough to be worth buying at these levels, and I'm talking about Polaris. That's right, Polaris, which makes snowmobiles, all-terrain vehicles, ATVs, motorcycles, some boats, some military vehicles, those crazy and hugely fun slingshot three-wheeled roadsters, and all sorts of replacement parts and accessories, just like the RV stocks I highlighted last week. Polaris was a formerly hot stock that peaked a few years ago. It spent most of 2018 and 2019 as a serial underperformer, thanks to the trade war with China. Then just when things were getting back on track after the phase one trade deal with the Chinese, the pandemic hit and the whole market crashed. Polaris' stock plunged from the mid-90s to $37 in a matter of weeks. Makes sense. Who wants to buy a snowmobile or an ATV when you're stuck in quarantine? But like so many other COVID losers, Polaris bottomed in early April, and its stock has made an incredible comeback, surging to 96 as of today. It's now erased all of its coronavirus-related losses, and of course it has, because business is very, very good for people who have a product that allows you to have fun outside where it's safe. In retrospect, I wish I'd recommended it a month or two ago. Someone on Twitter was saying to me, hey, Jim, you know what? You've just been making big mistakes. I said, well, you know, look, I make mistakes. I should have recommended this earlier. It was an incredible move, and if you caught it, all I can say is congratulations. You did a better job than I did, and you got horse sense. Personally, I didn't want to get behind a snowmobile company going into the summer without more proof that the business was turning because of the recession. You don't typically buy these in recession. Now, though, we've got that proof. Plus, the stock has spent the last couple of days pulling back from its recent highs, so I think you're getting a pretty good darn entry point right here, and I'm going to tell you why. First, what makes Polaris different from, say, the airlines or the cruise lines that I've been warning you away from? As I see it, those groups got way too hot. They ran up substantially from their lows, even though business is still terrible. A big chunk of that bounce was justified, but by last week, they'd gone about as far as they could go, and they were due for a serious pullback like the one we are having. That's not the Polaris story. Not at all. Polaris has a genuine turn. It started when the company reported at the end of April. While the actual numbers were unambiguously bad, not a lot of demand for snowmobiles or ATVs when everyone's sheltering in place, management's commentary was a lot more encouraging. They told us the worst was already behind them, and they gave us a tremendous amount of detail on North American power sports business. Basically, the second half of March, their power sports retail sales in North America declined by 40%, but then April was much better than expected. 3 weeks into the month, those sales were up, not down. Then over the course of May, we got all sorts of good news. I think Polaris would have rallied hard anyway, because it's exactly the kind of beaten down cyclical stock that suddenly went back into style on Wall Street fashion show until today. But this rally had more meat to it than many of the others. Specifically, about 2 weeks ago, Polaris made three incredibly positive announcements on the same day. First, CEO Scott Wine gave us some insight into how the business was doing. He talks about, quote, the unexpectedly sharp recovery we are seeing, which in many cases has meant unprecedented demand for our brands and vehicles, end quote. Unprecedented demand? I mean, he goes on, quote, the influx of new customers to our dealerships is very encouraging as people seeking fun family activities while social distancing recognize that our vehicles and think outside tagline resonate with their desires. Makes sense. Second, Polaris confirmed that they'll be maintaining their standard dividend, which currently yields 2.6%. When the company reported at the end of April, they said that they would delay the decision on whether or not to suspend the dividend until late May. They didn't want to cut the legs out from under their investors unless they had no other choice. Turns out the payout is safe. Third, Polaris doesn't have the cleanest balance sheet, but they negotiated with their creditors to get some relief from the most restrictive aspect of their covenants. Basically, they'll be allowed to borrow a lot more money if they need to through March of next year. Put it all together, and you got an incredibly bullish business update, a confirmation that the dividend is staying put, and a lot more financial flexibility. The very next day, CEO Scott Wine comes on our network and gives a fabulous interview to my friend Brian Sullivan on Worldwide Exchange, which is frankly where I got the idea to do this piece. Thank you, Brian. Wine made it very clear that even though the economy is still in rough shape, Polaris is thriving here because they're taking market share in a world where people are afraid to fly or take cruises or gather in large groups. Camping, riding around in an ATV or a snowmobile while wearing a helmet, this is all stuff you can do for fun while minimizing your potential COVID exposure. It's the right sports for the moment. Still, it's not exactly an undiscovered story. Polaris' stock has soared from its lows. The analysts are starting to upgrade it aggressively based on the great outdoors thesis. So then why do I feel so comfortable chasing it here? And you know I hate to chase. Well, because Polaris is taking share. They're bringing in lots of new customers. And I think this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity for this company. Just as importantly, the stock has a reasonable valuation. It sells for 17 times next year's earnings estimates. Hey, compare that to the RV plays like Winnebago and Thor, which sell for 20 and 22 times earnings, respectively, and are more expensive in, again, a recession. All right, so Polaris isn't quite a bargain. But it definitely isn't too hot to handle, especially with that 2.6% yield cushion. Don't get me wrong. Polaris is a somewhat high-risk story. They make some of the world's most expensive toys. And if the economy starts backsliding, well, that could hurt them. We know the trade war with China did some real damage and trade tensions are flaring up again. If things escalate, players, well, it takes a hit. But the bottom line, if you believe, as I do, that America is reopening rapidly, but we're not exactly going back to normal, too much social distancing, then Polaris is indeed the kind of stock you should own. This is a company that benefits enormously from the V-shaped recovery thesis, and it also works with a slower recovery because the great outdoors is taking market share from every other form of recreation that involves crowded indoor spaces. Let's go to Diego in Florida. Diego!
Jim, I wanted to ask about Vegas as people start heading back and MGM starts opening up more hotels. So should I hold my position with MGM despite the risk of second wave of coronavirus cases?
The one I'm more comfortable with is Wynn, because I think Wynn has examined the healthcare issue very heavily. MGM Resorts has had a very big move, and I question whether this is the right time to continue to stay in it. Let's go to Nick in Indiana. Nick.
Yes. Regarding AMC Movie Theater, I know they filed for bankruptcy. In your opinion, is it worth the risk to invest?
It's a very risky, risky situation. And it's the kind of situation that unless I look the CEO in the eye and ask the right questions, I feel like I'll be letting you, Nick, down in Indiana. So that's where I am on that one. Let's go to Joe in Florida. Joe.
Jim Cramer, the Prince of Profit.
Oh, man, I wish I were.
Stock.
Thank you. What's
the
up?
The MJ of the market.
Woo.
My question is Ford. With the world reopening back up again from the coronavirus and Ford's recent partnership with VW, you see Ford becoming a major player in the electric car market.
I sure did like what Jim Farley had to say this morning. He's the COO, and I always enjoy him. He's such a smart guy. When he was on Squawk on the Street with us, and, of course, the unbelievably good Phil LeBeau, I think the stock is very inexpensive. But the catalyst will not be electric vehicles. It will be the F-150, and it'll be Chinese sales. And until then, I think you're okay. And I have not felt that way about the stock. I felt very good after speaking to Farley. All right, look, there is a fierce bull market in the great outdoors. I tried to show you that with Thor. Now I am bringing you Polaris. That's the kind of stock you should own in your portfolio. Much more Mad Money Hit. Dreaming of a summer holiday? I'm sitting down with the CEO of Marriott Vacations Worldwide. Find out how that travel industry is adjusting to the new normal. And believe it or not, it is better than 2007, 2009. Then, with COVID-19 hospitalizations rising sharply in several states since Memorial Day, the pandemic is still holding steady. Tonight, I'm eyeing an under-the-radar company that's hoping to help treat the virus. And we're talking about convalescent blood, a term you might have heard about. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. What do we do with the travel and leisure stocks in this weird moment where the economy's coming back, but so is COVID-19? Consider the case of Marriott Vacations Worldwide, VAC. That's the timeshare and vacation rental business that was spun up by Marriott International nearly a decade ago. Like most of the lodging plays, Marriott Vacations got obliterated when the market crashed in February and March, with the stock plummeting from $130 to its lows, down to $30. You know, that's a 77% decline. But once the company was able to raise some fresh debt financing and the crisis started looking a lot less existential, the stock got its groove back. Marriott Vacations is now trading in the mid-90s. If you believe we're going back to normal, then this stock is absolutely worth owning. But it's been hammered over the last couple of days as the whole travel and leisure cohort suddenly fallen out of favor again because the new normal has some major differences with with the old normal. So is this a buying opportunity? We need to be a little more cautious. Let's dig deeper with Steve Weiss. He's the president and CEO of Marriott Vacations Worldwide. Get a better sense of how his company's doing and where it's headed. Mr. Weiss, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hi, Jim. How are you? Great to be back with you.
I'm glad to see you, Steve. It's great to see you. Is that at your home doing this from?
No, I'm actually in my office here at work.
All right. Fair enough. Well, let's go to a question about work. You are blessed, sir. You have said that you have seen just over 1% of your borrowers asked for your deferred payment program. We have companies go into default. We have individuals that I'm worried about with credit cards. That's an astonishing figure. Why do you think that is?
I think part of it is because of who we typically target as our owners. You may recall that we have people that average household income is north of $125,000, self-reported average net worth over $1.5 million. Many people view this as just a monthly payment. And quite frankly, they put great value on their vacations. The people that have reached out to us, we set up a deferred payment program for those that needed it because they either lost their job or 30% of their income. And when we ask them that question, do they qualify? Some said, nah, I was just calling to see if I could defer things. But by and large, only about 1% of our people have actually taken us up on that. And we're happy to try to help whenever we can.
Well, that's a tremendous loyalty that it shows. And it brings to another question that I have. Well, I always used to hear that, look, timeshares are not bought, they're sold. And yet this has not been a period where people have been able to sell anything. They're sheltering at home. They're the salespeople themselves haven't been able to show people various units that they might want. Is that old view a canard? Because these a lot of people seem to want to have a timeshare.
Well, you know, I think kind of history kind of speaks to that issue. For the last several years, more than 60% of our sales has been to our existing owners that want to buy more of our product. So that in and of itself says that they're not being sold, they're actually buying. But with that said, I mean, when the virus kind of hit its really hit the fan, the end of March, we closed all of our sales centers. We kept them closed till the end of May. We've just opened six back up here this past week. You know, we tried to augment that with some enhanced telesales activity where we took some of our sales executives that were used to taking physical tours and we actually put them on the phone. And I'm happy to report that we've got about $17 million worth of sales in about 4 weeks as a result of that. Not a big number, but it does keep the lights on.
Well, but Steve, let me ask you. Housing itself is doing pretty well. We had Jay Powell speaking today. Rates are incredibly low. Don't these represent great investments where you have very little interest costs? You can rent them out at a level where people are saying, you know what? I want a vacation that is going to be clean because I know you disinfect everything at a nice resort. That the people who are buying the second and the third with low interest rates, they're financially making a good investment.
Yeah, obviously, we try to stay away from the I word because it's a registered real estate product. We want
right.
to treat it like a security. But with that said, I think people are making a wise decision to invest in their vacations for the future. And as you well know, vacations are becoming ever more important than they've ever been. People need time away to be able to kind of find a way to reinvent themselves, reinvigorate themselves. And as a result, we think we provide a perfect opportunity of that in some pretty nice spaces, obviously bigger than hotel rooms, in some pretty great destinations.
Now, in your conference call at the very beginning, you talk about it starting, you're looking at the cadence. Marco Island, 22%, and then 54% for, and then 80%. Newport Coast in Southern California, 23, 63, 80. These are remarkable comebacks for these very important areas.
They are, and quite frankly, it's kind of playing out as we thought it would. I won't say we were brilliant in being able to do this. I think it's pretty logical. We thought that the leisure transient would come back first before business or group. We thought that short drive markets would come back first, then long drive, then short flight, long flight, and then last but not least, kind of the transoceanic stuff. And in fact, we're seeing that. We're seeing that in Hilton Head, Myrtle Beach, Marco Island, Florida, Newport Coast, California, Park City, Utah. These are places that people can get to. They're great vacation destinations. And our owners who own their vacations and put pretty high value in them, They're anxious to get out of their house and get to some place where they can enjoy themselves.
One last question. There had always been this debate, and you solved it for me, but I want we haven't seen you in a long time. There were people who were saying, you know what, Airbnb is going to wipe out Marriott Vacations worldwide. I know that wasn't the case. You taught me that wasn't the case. But, you know, we have a lot of new viewers and younger viewers, so maybe you can explain to them why you're not dead and why Airbnb, frankly, hasn't been able to come public.
Well, I think part of it is simply we do offer a slightly different product. You know, Airbnb, while they have lots of product everywhere, if you think about many destinations, you're spending time in someone's condo. I've said, you know, if I was to go to New York City with my family, if my kids were younger, the first thing I'd say when I came through the door is don't touch anything, because it's not, you know, and these are not. Those are not resorts that are amenitized. They don't have swimming pools, gyms, you name it. And we believe that we offer kind of a full service experience in terms of being able to get housekeeping and food and beverage facilities and everything. So things that you can't really find in most Airbnb locations. So I think Airbnb has done a remarkable job of being able to put together an offering that resonates with some people. It doesn't necessarily resonate with us. You walk around our resorts, you'll see mostly families with kids traveling. Most Airbnbs, it's largely singles or couples not traveling with their kids.
All right. Well, look, Steve, it's great to see you. I know that you're a terrific businessman. Misjudged at the beginning by me by not understanding the Airbnb relationship. You're very different businesses, and you're a very well-run business. Thank you so much for coming on Mad Money.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. That's Steve Weiss, President and CEO of Marriott Vacations Worldwide. I learned a lot. It's good business. Mad Money's back after the break. It is time! Time for the lightning round! And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the lightning round! I'm going to start with Joseph in Florida. Joseph!
Hey, Jim. Booyah,
booyah.
Orlando.
All
first,
right.
I want to give a quick shout-out to my fellow 2020 U.S. NBA graduates. Jim,
why not?
What are your thoughts on WWE? Is this a contender?
WWE, the only way I'm going to buy WWE is through a derivative way, Take-Two Interactive, TTWO. And remember, the in-home trade is back. Let's go to Ryan in Arkansas. Ryan!
Big booyah from the woods of Arkansas, Jim.
There you go.
Thank you.
Been there. Kind of like it.
What's
up? All
the money you've made me and all you do.
What's happening?
So I'm calling about Triumph ticker TGI.
I like it because I think that the Boeing is going to get the high sign soon from the FAA. I mean, the FAA can only try to put out a company out of business for so long. Let's go to John in Washington. John.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for all your wisdom and advice over the years. We've been listening since your days on the radio.
Oh, my.
I recently bought Chegg in the 60s after the CEO appeared on your show.
Right. Well, you're all right. You're right. It's come down. But, you know, why don't you wait till it's 50 to get a better average? I don't want your average down right here. I do believe in the story. I think it's a good story. Dan Rosenzweig's an honest guy. Let's go to Bill in Pennsylvania. Bill.
Chill man.
I mean the chill man.
Yeah, I got a Cloudflare. What do you think? Should I buy more?
Yeah, why not? Cloudflare's good. Hey, I'll throw in CloudStrike. I'm going to throw in Snowflake. They'll give you a threesome. Got the whole thing. I got a whole meteorological complex going. Let's go to Dave in California. Dave.
Hey, booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Dave.
Hey, a while back, you had a great company on VIAV Solutions. I thought it was a great essential service company in the rollout of 5G, and it seems to be best of breed.
Yeah, we like that. Why is that stock not all the way up? Why is that stock down to... I am with you. I am with you. I like that company. And by the way, I like 5G. I also like Ericsson. I'm doing a lot of twofers tonight. What can I tell you? I feel very very charitable, as well as ecumenical. Let's go to Gregory in Florida. Gregory.
Jimbo, chill, my dude.
The chill.
Action Alerts Club member here.
Yes, tomorrow morning. Tomorrow, 11:30 conference call. I'm going to break some heads. What's going on? What's going on?
Hey, listen, you've been really bullish on cybersecurity recently,
yes,
including Family Save Okta, Palo Alto, a few others. The company I'm calling about is Israeli. You've had the CEO on in the past, and they recently made an acquisition of an identity as a service company,
okay,
Adaptive Holdings. which should allow it to up its already strong game when it comes to
the Israeli one is the Israeli is CyberArk. I don't like it as much as the other ones that I've been recommending. It's got doesn't have enough cloud and that, ladies and gentlemen, the lightning round.
The lightning round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
If you think we've got the pandemic under control, I want you to think again. For months, I've been telling you that we won't be fully out of this woods until we get a vaccine. Sure enough, since America started coming out of lockdown around Memorial Day, we've seen a major uptick in COVID-19 cases in the states that reopened early. In short, it's not over, which means we need to keep focusing on the companies that are coming up with innovative ways to fight the virus. Take Cerus, a speculative company at CERUS, by the way, speculative biotech company that's in the blood business. Specifically, Cerus uses its technology to render most blood-borne viruses, bacteria, and parasites inactive. When you donate blood, the blood center will often run the plasma and the platelets through a system like Cerus's before giving it to someone else. But can it potentially do more than that? When the COVID-19 pandemic exploded in March, Cerus started working on a way to use their technology to fight the disease. This is what's known as, and you've heard this term, convalescent plasma. Like convalescing. They take blood from people who've already recovered from COVID, run it through Cerus' system, and then transfuse it into patients who are still struggling with severe infections. We need to know more about this technology. So let's take a closer look with Obi Greenman. He's the president and CEO of Cerus. Learn more about his company and how it is fighting COVID-19, among many other things. Mr. Greenman, welcome to Mad Money.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for the invitation. It's great to be on your show.
Well, I'll tell you, sir, I am so thrilled you're here. I was with a good friend of mine last night who got COVID early on. And he went to the Hackensack Medical, which is a great hospital here, to give convalescent plasma. He's a very smart man. And he said, everybody who has it, and a lot of my friends have had it, must do this because despite what China says, this is saving lives. You're right on the front lines. It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems like there's some great anecdotal data suggesting that it works. And our first experience with it was during the Ebola outbreak in West Africa in 2015. We were partnered with the Gates Foundation trying to make convalescent plasma available then. So we were ready once this pandemic happened. And our first experience here was in Europe, actually, in northern Italy with our partner Kedrion, and also in Spain and Switzerland as well. And we really were able to work with our blood center customers and hospitals and stand up those convalescent plasma programs to be able to provide it to patients.
You know, as you said, though, it is anecdotal. When will we get some very serious studies in this? China stopped its study early, but I'm biased. I don't trust the Chinese. They have stopped trials before, even though they ended up might have been good. Will we have anything definitive about what convalescent plasma does soon from any major journal that we can study?
Well, I think there's a number of randomized controlled clinical studies that are underway both in Europe and the U.S., and they should be reporting in the next weeks and months. So I think that's really promising. Cerus has now deployed our technology at, I think, like 65 sites across Europe, Middle East, Africa, South America, and the U.S. So there are a lot of activities underway, and it really is amazing what's happening. It's my firm belief that the blood centers are sort of the unsung heroes of this pandemic, and that they're moving heaven and earth to try and make this convalescent plasma available to patients, really sick patients. It's really been quite remarkable.
Now, I don't want to by any means say this is your only business. As a matter of fact, in the Q&A section recently of a transcript I was reading, a very smart analyst is saying, you know what, this is actually delayed some of the other things that you can do because people don't voluntarily give the blood that you would otherwise need. So where's the rest of your business? How's it doing?
It's doing really well. I mean, the COVID-19 impact has had somewhat of a slowdown in clinical trials, but the overall business, we've really weathered the storm so far, and the business is resilient, and the team has been resilient. The studies that you're referring to for our red cell clinical studies are now enrolling again. Most of the sites that paused during the height of the pandemic over the last couple of months have started enrolling patients again. So it's really great to see that, those phase 3 studies for our red cell program.
right? So when people give blood, I mean, I think they just give blood, they get the donut and they leave. But there's a lot more to it, right? Once that blood is taken, it's not just put into some big tank. There's work that Cerus does with it.
Yeah, well, we work primarily with our blood center partners, and there's a whole processing scheme for how they collect and distribute blood across the U.S. And I think, you know, fundamentally, you know, it all starts with the donors, and just want to put a little plug for the blood centers right now. This Sunday is World Blood Donor Day, and they're really, you know, in a critical situation right now because typically the inventory of blood at even one time is like, you know, 3 to 5 days. I think that's been cut in half during the COVID-19 crisis. But anyway, you know, they're, the blood supply is still available and being maintained by blood centers throughout the U.S. and through the world for that matter.
Okay, so what are you doing with the funding from DARPA?
Yeah, so the DARPA funding I think you're referring to is partnered with one of our collaborators in this convalescent plasma consortium. We will actually work more closely with U.S. BARDA, which is the Biomedical okay. Advanced Research and Development Agency. And back in 2017, during the previous epidemic, which was the Zika epidemic, you probably remember, U.S. BARDA came to us and said, you know, we see that your products are approved for platelets and plasma. That's great because it safeguards the blood supply. We'd really like to have that available in the United States for red cells. Can we help you do that? And so they provided us with a contract of about $214 million to accelerate that program through to FDA approval. That's what funds our phase 3 clinical trials and our commercial manufacturing scale up.
Okay, one last question. I know that you're starting seeing some good growth. You are targeting 20 to 25% revenue growth in 2020. Will you be able to make that despite the problems or because of COVID-19?
Well, I think it's just the resilience of our business. We're one of the few med tech companies that hasn't had to pull guidance. So we reaffirmed that guidance on our most recent quarterly call and expect to see robust growth coming out of the United States as well as from Europe.
Oh, excellent. Okay, well, it's a speculative stock, but you're doing a lot of good things. And I know from people who are doing convalescent plasma, you are crucial in the process. Thank you, OB Greenman, for coming on Mad Money.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Really appreciate it. It's been an honor.
That's OB Greenman, President and CEO of Cerus Corporation, C-E-R-S. Do your homework, but I think that they have this convalescent plasma, I think, is going to be very, very important in the coming months of this disease. Mad Money's back after the break. All right, he's got some hot IPOs, but how about this? The Grubhub got this deal from Just Eat, and I've got to tell you, I don't think it's the last bid. I think there could be higher ones. I'm not an arbitrageur, but I think the stock may still be worth buying. Like I said, there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you tomorrow.